Now, of course, as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to grip the globe, new surveillance methods are being brought in to try and stop the spread. Biometric data collection, as well as geolocation, are being used across the world to monitor the movements of citizens. Now, these surveillance methods, they track our location through our phones to ensure we're following the social distancing regulations and other things. These apps are collecting users' data, and as you can imagine, there are already privacy and security concerns. How long will these companies have our data for, and what exactly are they getting from us? Now, I have to say, when the Prime Minister came out at the end of the week and said, you know, we need 40% of Australians to download this app and have a go, I thought, well, gee, you know, that's the least you can do. I've got no problems at all. But sometimes it's just, you know, just important to know what we're getting ourselves into. So that's why we've got Steve Sammartino, futurist and business technology expert. He's written a piece about this in the News Corp publications, and I'm delighted to say he's on the line. How are you, Steve?
G'day, Luke. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. You start your piece by talking about Jazz and Gary. No doubt bored as they dealt with home detention. They thought they'd, you know, have a bit of fun by putting some old holiday snaps on Facebook. What happened after that?
Well, they received a knock at the door after that, received a curt exchange with the police, and were issued with fines worth over $3,000 for breaching the non-essential travel bans. And they were a little bit shocked at that, and it obviously blew up on social media, and people said, what's going on here? The mix-up was later corrected, and the fines were revoked by the local sergeant. But it just does go to show that even the things that we haven't quite signed up to, there's Big Brother is watching. And while the book was called 1984, it might have just been 30 or so years later. But then you tell you, 1984 has finally arrived. And yeah, tell you what, I think we're about to enter a new era of surveillance. And that's the real word for it. Surveillance.
Yeah. I just go back to something I said, and you make the point. In general, these, quote, for our own good, unquote, changes have been accepted by the public. I mean, my view is, if the least I can do is download an app and use it for a period of time in order to help keep us all safe, then that's a small price to pay. You might say that's naive, do you?
Look, I don't say it's naive. I think what's really important is that we have this discussion. And here's why, Luke, is that what we need to do is to understand what's inside the technology, how it's going to be used, and to ensure that it is used for the period of the crisis and then it is switched off permanently after that. Because what we have is, in situations of great fear and great change, you know, like in wars and this pandemic, which is really a new thing for the world, we've never seen a global pandemic of this nature, certainly since we've had the globalized economy,
yeah,
is that we say yes to things because we're really concerned in the short term. And so we say, yeah, absolutely. We saw it with 9/11. We said, yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Let's have more checks at the airport. I want to be on a plane that's safe. And I think with coronavirus, we want the same thing. If we can use the technology to make everyone safer and even eradicate it, I'm all for it. But what we need to know is, how much data are they gathering? How much do they actually need to track us? And will they turn it off?
Yeah.
I've got some concerns with the amount of data they're going to track, and I think they're going to take much more than they need. And I'm incredibly fearful that after the pandemic is gone, they won't turn it off.
What interested me through the week is the idea, I think, put forward by one or two others. It was contesting the use of this app, which I think comes initially from, might have been used in Singapore, is that other people were saying Apple and Google, etc., already have apps, already have access to similar data, which would replicate what this app would provide. Now, is there truth in that? And just how much are we currently giving up of our data?
Yeah, so the Edward Snowden revelations of about 7 years ago or 8 years ago tell us that all of this data is already collected by every private company that has a smartphone or the software with the smartphones. And the big ones that we can mention here are Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, Google, and Amazon, and Samsung, I guess, as well. They already collect and have all of this data. They know where we are, who we connect with, what we do. I mean, you can turn these things off, but the very large majority of consumers don't understand how to turn off these tracking devices within their phone. They already have it. And one of the questions we probably should be asking is, should we be more concerned that the government are about to get it? Or should we be saying, holy wow, these big companies, and they're the biggest companies in the world now, already have this info. So Apple and Google have formed a consortium to come together, and they own the two biggest smartphone operating systems, which is Android and the iOS Apple operating system, to build a little piece of software to hand over to the governments. Now, I would say that what we've got here is corporations that are more powerful than government, because the government are having to go to them cap in hand saying, dear please, yes, Mr. Apple, dear please, Mr. Google, can I use your technology, hardware and software so that I can track my consumers?
Yeah, at least government is accountable. I mean, if something like that is is put on the citizen, the citizen's got some option in 3 years or 4 years' time or by whatever other means in the meantime between elections to at least make their displeasure known. But the big companies, they're all to themselves almost.
You got it in one, Luke, and that's why I'm speaking to you, brother. You're a man who gets it. And so this is the exact situation. I'm actually quite happy for the government to have access to some of my most intimate data. I mean, let's be honest, right? They already have access to our medical records through Medicare. They already have access to our face through our passports. They have access to our personal financial information through the ATO records. So they should be and are the most trusted institution within our company's infrastructure. I'm actually more worried to the fact that we've got private companies that have this data and we have to use them to help the government. I would much rather have this in government hands because they're voted in. They're the stewards of the people that live in their society, whereas no one voted in the CEO of Apple or Google. They're not there for us. They're there to increase shareholder wealth. And so for me, it actually points out the power of big tech and that we should be really worried about data that big tech hoover up without our knowledge. I mean, when's the last time you read those terms and conditions, the 30,000 words that pop up every other day when we have to renew our software?
Well, mate, like everyone else, I imagine, it may be except for you, like everyone else, I look for the box and tick, I agree.
Yes, and you say, yes, I'm sure I agree.
Yes, exactly right, then it's done.
Well, I'm the guy who's read it, only because it's part of my job.
Right. But, well, mate, I've got to ask you, do you end up clicking I agree?
Yeah, I do. And you know why I do? This is the interesting bit, is that opting out is not an option. We live in an economy where if you want to participate in the modern economy, you have no choice but to use the tools. And the tools of the modern economy are software, smartphones, our laptops. I mean, imagine trying to go a week without using those tools. You really wouldn't be able to do your job. You as a radio announcer wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to do it. Yep. Even you know, a truckie going out and delivering his goods wouldn't be able to do it without Google Maps. And so that says to me that data and data tracking has actually almost become like public infrastructure. And I actually think deep down in my heart that this stuff, search and data and maps, should all be owned by the government. I actually don't think we should allow private companies to have so much power. I mean, years ago, we took away Standard Oil and the railways actually went all into private hands. We actually split them up a couple of hundred years ago because they had too much power. And I think we're at that stage now.
Gee, that's an intriguing thought. And just off the top of my head, I can't argue against that. You're right. What happens if this information gets hacked? If we opt into what the government's talking about, at least in regard to COVID-19, will there be the sensitive information that might see us, you know, lose a dollar or two, at least have our privacy infiltrated? Or is it not going to be that deep and important?
Yeah, look, the hacks happen all the time. The thing that's interesting is that most of the hacks that happen, they happen in different places at different times. The problem that you get is when all of this information gets into one set of databases, that it increases the risk. If that gets hacked, then there's more risk that goes with it. The problem with hacking isn't that it doesn't happen. It happens all the time. The problem is that we don't know about 99% of the hacks that happen. And at the moment, it's not a huge problem because most of it is really just informational. And the finance side of hacking, we're protected by government rules. And banks, when hacks do happen, actually, it's the fault of the bank and they have to give you the money back. The problem that will happen with hacks, actually, more than healthcare, actually becomes when our cars are run on the internet and our electricity grid is run on the internet and everything that's physical in our world is run on the internet. Because then what you can do is you can shut down the economy. So just imagine in the future if we had a virus, but a different kind of virus, an internet virus, that no one can own or control, or find a let's call it find an inoculation for it.
Yeah.
So what would happen then? That virus would be worse, because that virus would shut down the factories that make our food, the tractors that go on the farms, the stores that we buy things on, the internet, everything. So, you know, the lights would go off in our houses.
Gosh.
So the real problem of hacking actually hasn't happened yet. It's when this new era where all of our physical world is connected to the internet.
Yeah.
That's why we need to fix these problems now, before we have what we call the Internet of Things, where our entire physical world is connected.
Wow. Gosh, it's always great to chat to you, mate. Quickly before we go, just let me throw this one at you. When we have what we have now, this virus, there's no cure, there's no vaccine, so all we're left with, I guess, essentially, is good hygiene and social distancing. In the rush to find an answer, in the rush to find a vaccine, in a rush to keep ourselves safe, are we, when these things come along, an idea from government to let us, for us to let them into our lives, do we compromise what we would otherwise not do? And in other words, were there not this situation, we'd be saying, hey, not going to happen. But in this situation, I guess we compromise a bit, do we?
In times of great change, compromise are always given, because we want to get out of the hole we're in.
Yeah, exactly. SteveSammartino.com. If you've never heard a futurist, you just did. Great to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Luke.